south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
You've often heard me say the gringo advantage is alive and well, and it's much stronger the farther you get off the gringo tourist trail. Once you get down here, you'll find that out soon enough. Now, occasionally a gringo or expat will say, Johnny, do you think the gringo advantage will ever die? Could it fade away or get mysteriously or intentionally killed off? My answer to that is I certainly hope not. But there are certain gringos and expats out there who put the gringo advantage at risk. Yes, there is a contingent of gringo assholes out there who are just not nice people. They're bad actors. They give gringos a bad name. And yes, occasionally I do run into them. A lot of these guys are the gringos you run into that look like they've hit the skids or gone native. Now, of course, some of those gringos who've gone native, who've gone to seed, are nice guys. They're not a-holes. But still, they may have so many bad habits and vices, you don't want to get too close to them. In other words, you don't want them to have your phone number or, heaven forbid, know where you live. There are others, of course, that are just plain rip-off artists, and you don't know it until you've been ripped. And, of course, certain gringos are parasites. Hangers-on, guys with lots of vices, who will try to get you involved in their vices, too. Then there's those gringos and expats who make a decent first impression on you, though they end up being what I call time vampires. And they end up wearing on you, sometimes even wearing you out. Every time you see them, it seems they want to cling and hang on. They can be definitely hard to get rid of. That can be a bit awkward, but if you don't do it, that is, somehow give out enough of a negative vibe to discourage them. Well, unfortunately, every time you're out and about, and you happen to see one of these guys out of the corner of your eye, if you wave or they spot you, they'll run up and there'll be an uncomfortable moment or two. You might have to think fast to dig deep in that box of excuses, or you'll never get rid of them. I don't know about you, but I'm one of those guys, for example, if I'm in a grocery store and I see a time vampire out of the corner of my eye or in the aisle I'm about to turn into, oftentimes I can't help but look for an escape route. Hey, we've all got a few of those in our own families, right? Sadly, if you have a relative who's a time vampire, that's the worst kind. Could be he's not even a bad guy at all, just a guy that bores you to death or puts you to sleep while he's talking to you. Well, generally, I exit stage right or stage left, whatever stage gets me the hell out of there before he sees me. Which brings to mind one particular guy I dread seeing when I'm doing my power walk. I can't even remember his name, but I dubbed him in my head anyway, Mr. Excitement. Because he's anything but. Somehow, he got introduced to me quite a while ago, and now he thinks we're buddies. And really, the only thing we have in common is that he's an expat gringo and I'm an expat gringo. Though here in Latin America, that's the basis, or the start anyway, of a lot of friendships. Has that ever happened to you? You're introduced to somebody and suddenly he's clinging to you? Asking for your fake book or WhatsApp number so he can communicate with you? The question is, how do you get out of something like that gracefully? And I just tell people like him, I don't use Facebook or WhatsApp. Because I hate the idea that Big Brother's spying on me and asswipes like Mark Zuckerberg are collecting all your data and selling it. And that's usually enough to shut down the conversation when a guy's getting a little bit too nosy or personal. Now, I know what some of you are thinking. Johnny, you're a real asshole. But you know, it's relative. It all depends on who's the asshole umpire for the day. You know, who's keeping score. I mean, really, you hate to be rude, but sometimes when it's necessary, you skate on the edge of it. Now, speaking of gringos and expats who do give gringos and expats a bad name, I'm talking about gringos and expats who use and abuse the gringo advantage. Well, just this weekend, I ran into the perfect example of such a creature. And this is how it went. I was sitting at one of those outdoor tables at a cigar bar with a pretty cool 40-something expat I just met. We had a little meeting, and I told him to meet me at one of my favorite people-watching areas, that cigar bar. And at the table right next door, there was a lone gringo, a chain-smoking, hard-drinking gringo expat, a guy I'd never seen before. He appeared to be tall and handsome in a Northern European kind of way. But it was around 9 o'clock, getting dark, and your eyes can play tricks. Once again, neither I nor my gringo buddy knew this guy. Anyway, he got right up, walked over to our table, with a fag in his mouth and a half glass of liquor in his hand. He said, aha, two Americans speaking English. He said, as a fellow American, I'm interested in having a conversation in English. No more of this Spanish bullshit for me. Now, I can tell you down here in Latin America, no one's really used to that kind of introduction. So I looked at my buddy, who was to my left, and I said, what do you think? But the look on my face and the way I rolled my eyes said what I really thought. No way, Jose. Move right along. Hit the road, Jack. Because, you know, first impressions are everything, and this guy somehow gave me bad vibes. I was hoping with my eye roll that my buddy would tell the guy, we're having a private discussion here, maybe next time. But my gringo buddy did not comply. He was too nice a guy to shut him down, so he said, sure, come on, join us. Sit right down. Then came the usual, where are you from, what you doing here, and all that. Now, even with the bad lighting, it didn't take me long to notice the guy was missing a front tooth. Not at all a good look. Bad for first impressions, especially for a gringo in a foreign land being introduced to other gringos. Let me repeat that. The guy had no front tooth and didn't seem at all concerned about it. Now, don't tell me that doesn't set up a certain stereotype in your mind, since us gringos have practically the highest standards in the world when it comes to nice, straight, white teeth. Now, the Brits can get away with having crooked, mangled, even missing teeth. When it comes to Brits, even Pulitzer Prize authors and Nobel Prize-winning scientists often have crooked, yellow-greenish teeth. They don't seem to care, and we do forgive them for that. It's a British thing, though we do gossip about it behind their backs. The phrase pearly whites is an American thing, not British. But when an adult American has greenish, yellow, snaggle teeth, or worse than that, missing one or more in the front rack, we make instant judgments, don't we? Drug addict, carny, white trash, alky. And in the U.S., old age is not even an excuse for having bad teeth. Hell, my mom's 92 and she's got a full rack. Anyway, this tall gringo, I'm guessing he was probably 50 years old, gave us two gringos the instant impression he'd gone to seed, gone native. Though, I have to say, I think he was in the early stages of going native because he still dressed quite normally, not unduly dirty or rumpled. Didn't have that telltale, greasy hair gone native look. Obviously, like cancer, going native has its stages too. Now, of course, gringos gone native always have interesting stories, so we didn't add much to the conversation. We just let him ramble on. Now, of course, when you're sitting in an outdoor cafe-style restaurant, having a coffee or cigar or whatever, just people watching, as people pass by, once in a while, a beggar will stop, especially at a table of gringos. Hey, if I was a beggar, that's where I'd stop, the table with the gringos. Anyway, this poor, pathetic old lady walked over with her little beggar's cup. I'd say she was 50-ish, but all washed out, alcoholic, whatever, and her nose was all eroded. Difficult to look at. You didn't want to stare. She stuck out her hand asking for money and took the other hand, pointed to her nose and said, I have cancer. I have to admit, I fell for it. So did my gringo buddy. My buddy even said, if anyone needs a helping hand, that lady does. And he started digging into his pocket for some change. Then the tall, toothless gringo said, don't give her anything. She's a crack addict. And my gringo buddy said, how do you know that? He said, well, there's a place about 4 blocks from here where you can get all kinds of drugs, including crack. In fact, he says you can get a rock of crack for around $5. And when you hear that, that's when the little bell goes off in your head. You're thinking this gringo knows way too much about crack. At that very moment, my gringo buddy looked at me with a certain look that said he was thinking the exact same thing. And that's when our dentally challenged gringo asked me and my gringo friend for our WhatsApp numbers. Well, I had my pat answer, no WhatsApp, no Facebook, no anti-social media, no anything. And he seemed flabbergasted. He said, come on, every gringo has WhatsApp. I said, not me. He said, why not? And I said, I have my reasons. Which doesn't seem to be a good enough reason for lots of people who keep prying. Anyway, like I said, me and my buddy didn't say much. We just listened. But man, could this guy spin a yarn. By the way, he did shoo away that crackhead lady. Next thing you know, a group of beautiful Latinas walked by. And you know, when you're sitting around, people watching, sometimes you comment to yourselves. And sometimes you hone in on a person or two and you conjure up a somewhat plausible, funny, or clever story to go along with a person that just walked by. You know, just for an inside laugh, that's what people watching is all about sometimes. Have you ever done that? It's a lot of fun. You know, sitting around, making up a ridiculous story about someone you don't know that just walked by. If you've got some clever people together, you can generate a lot of laughs. Anyway, the dentally challenged gringo said, see those girls? They're not my type. I've got higher standards than that. And my gringo buddy said, there's nothing wrong with those girls. They're very attractive. That's when the tall, dentally challenged gringo told a whopper. At least my buddy and I hope it was a whopper. It would have been really sad if it was true. He said, listen, you guys, I've been to 30 different countries, and I've been living here in Latin America for 4 years now, and I've bedded 2,000 women. Yep, I'm not kidding. He said he bedded 2,000 ladies. That means this toothless bugger's up there with the likes of Wilt Chamberlain and Errol Flynn, if you remember him. Anyway, my buddy said, 2,000 women? He said, yep, that's right. So I ought to know women. I'm an expert on the subject. Oh, and then the guy jumped up and said, I'll be right back. I got to get another drink. That's when my gringo buddy gave me a smirk and said, 2,000 ladies, huh? Right on the head, 2K. How are we going to ditch this guy? He said. Took the words right out of my mouth. And I said, yeah, let's ditch him. But how are we going to ditch him diplomatically without causing a scene or ruffling feathers? Suddenly, the guy was standing in front of us again with a fresh drink. He was drinking the hard stuff straight, in a snifter, no less. He said, I'll tell you what, boys. He said, this place closes at 10. How about we finish our drinks and I'll take you to the best whorehouse in town? He says, I'm their best customer. I know the owner. I'm a VIP client. That's when my buddy chimed in trying to save face. He said, look, Johnny and I are hungry. We're just going to go to a restaurant and call it a night. He said, what kind of food do you like? And my buddy said, seafood. We're looking for a seafood dinner tonight. Then our gringo Wilt Chamberlain said, seafood, huh? I know just the place. Follow me. He turned around, told the waiter to bring the checks, and me and my buddy looked at each other and we thought, oh no, now we're really stuck. We have to eat dinner with this guy? Oh, by the way, this guy did not look like he hit the skids, but it was nighttime. His clothes seemed clean and he wasn't disheveled. He kind of just looked a bit washed out for his age, like he'd seen better days. And of course, the missing tooth thing, the chain smoking, the 2,000 women claim with a straight face, no less, and that VIP strip club membership claim. That sort of painted a picture, you know? So anyway, we paid the bill, started walking down the main drag. And this guy, man, he knew everybody on the strip, all the regulars anyway. We'd pass people, he'd say, how are you? Give him high fives. Then my buddy and I caught a break. We walked past another bar. He popped in for a second and said, keep walking straight. I'll catch up. Well, that was our cue. We picked up the pace, took an immediate left, kind of jogged for a block and a half, zigzagged through another couple blocks, and we knew we'd lost them. Luckily, we stumbled on a nice seafood restaurant. After that, we went home, my buddy, to an Airbnb he was staying at, and me to a short-term rental about a kilometer away. All the while, though, slightly nervous, looking over our shoulders, hoping that gringo piece of work, that time vampire gringo gone native, hadn't picked up our trail. So the moral of that story is there are gringos like that down here in Latin America that give us a bad name. And though they're not necessarily ruining our gringo advantage, they're certainly taking advantage of it. You could say putting a strain on it, kind of sucking out the goodwill. Though quite a few of them I've discovered hit the skids or went native because they didn't have much discipline. They didn't have any restraint. When they found out how easy and cheap it is to live here, they kind of took a dive into the deep end and never came up for air. Not to mention the availability of ultra-cheap booze and drugs. And part of that gringo advantage, you know, is that the cops, as a rule, rarely pick on gringos. They mostly just leave us alone or want to be our friends, making it that much easier to go native because you've got no fear. Anyway, my advice is to be cordial to these guys when they try to come up to you and bond. Do keep your distance, though, because some will want to cling to you, and they're hard as hell to get rid of. Unless, of course, you're one of those gringos with a savior complex. We all need hobbies, right? The question is, do you want one of these guys camping out on your porch? All right, changing gears. Now, here's an interesting little letter. You know, once you land down here in Latin America, you're guaranteed to make some mistakes. Hopefully not tragic mistakes, but I'm talking about mistakes that could easily have been avoided. For example, you know, not so long ago, I was sitting with a gringo expat. He said, Johnny, what would you not do or do over again if you could go back and retrace the steps you made when you first came down to Latin America? And I said, man, the list of things I would not have done would be longer than my arm. But hey, in the early days, I was kind of like the Lone Ranger. There was no internet, no cell phones, no expat blogs, no expat YouTube sites, no books, just a few dumb magazines like International Living, no expats to really communicate with or talk to. Well, I take that back. If you came down to a place like Costa Rica, high on the gringo tourist trail, you could find plenty of expats to talk to, but getting good advice from them was really hit and miss because they made a ton of mistakes too. Anyway, you'll make mistakes, but hopefully none of them fatal. None of mine were, though some came close. Now, some of the most common errors and mistakes expats make happen when we're buying, renting, or building a house. It's a big, complicated subject. That's why I'm going to read you this letter. It comes from a lady named Miss N, who moved to Panama some years ago and ended up changing residences 11 different times. 11 different times in just 8 years. Man, did she have perseverance. Oddly enough, it's a wonder why after two or three false starts like that, she didn't head back to the States with her tail between her legs. But she didn't. She stuck it out. So then why did she move 11 times in 8 years? Obviously, things did not work out the way she planned. Not at all. So I suggest you listen up and pay attention so none of these things happen to you. As usual, I'll paraphrase this and cut out the boring parts. She says, "My name is Miss N, and I'm an expat who has lived in Panama since 2015, about 8 years. I'm retired and live here with my husband and dog. To date, I've lived in 11 places. If that sounds like a lot, trust me, you're not wrong." Then she says, "Before I begin, I must tell you, we adore living in Panama. But boy, I wish I knew way back when we first came down what I know now." She says, "First and foremost, I cannot stress enough, do not rent sight unseen over the internet. Bad idea. My husband and I came to Panama on an exploratory vacation in June of 2013. We stayed in Boquete for 10 days and immediately fell in love with the quaint little town. We knew we wanted to retire here. We thought about getting a place, but we still had to go home, work on getting our visas, quit our jobs, sell our home and all of our belongings, etc. We had no idea the timeline of how long all that would take. We were, however, smart enough to get a lawyer in Boquete. We found a nice little house at a good price. The pictures were gorgeous, and the landlord, who was from the U.S., would rent it to us, he said, for 3 months. We figured, what could go wrong in 3 months? Again, we found this place on the internet. So we rented the place long distance, and off we went. Little did we know, when we got on the airplane, that the house that we rented was a nightmare. The pictures of the little cute house with the great furniture were taken 10 years prior. It was a furnished place, and the furniture in the house, we found, were old and moldy. Oh, and when we were still in the States, the landlord insisted on the first month, last month, and a security deposit up front to hold the house for us. We blindly wired him all that dough, and we found that that is not a common practice. In Panama, you only pay the first month's rent and a security deposit, not first and last month's rent and security deposit. But what did we know? I guess we should have showed the contract to our lawyer, But back to that house. Although we had water when the landlord gave us the keys, we were out of water by the end of the first day. The water in the 600-gallon tank behind the house leaked like a sieve. You couldn't see it, but it was leaking under the foundation of the house. It wasn't long before we figured it out, because there was a constant ring of mold around the area. We would wake up to find what looked like white cotton by the back door that extended to our kitchen. It grew so quickly, we could actually see it expand from hour to hour. And because the water petered out the very first day, my 70-year-old husband would have to walk to the nearest store and walk back uphill with large bottles of water, the largest that he could carry, so we could have water in the house for the next day. The first day, we had another surprise. When the landlord gave us the keys, he said he was leaving, and when he got to his car, he turned around and said, "Oh, by the way, you have to buy cable TV by the day. The cable company's right up the road, and you have to buy cards to recharge it. Each recharge lasts 24 hours. So tomorrow, your TV will go off unless you go to the company and buy a bunch of those recarga cards." We didn't even know what he was talking about. Not knowing what that was about was another big mistake. Needless to say, there were so many other things wrong with that house and all that mold, we have since dubbed it the Fuzzy House. Now for mistake number two, or was it three or four? That house we selected was very close to the public fairgrounds. We thought, hey, perfect. We're within easy walking distance to the park. The perfect dog walking / pooping place. Curses. Foiled again. How were we to know when we moved to Boquete on November 1st that in Panama, the first weeks of November are when many national holidays take place. Holidays come with festivities on that fairground. Every one of them being huge, loud events and music lasting to 5 a.m. That meant not many nights of sleep in November. The straw that broke the camel's back and why we finally moved early were the drunks that used our front lawn as a urinal. And then when my husband saw a man climb on our porch and look into our window, that was it. So we lasted about a month in a three-month rental. We found a property manager then who showed us another rental and we moved out the very next day. So much for that volley of mistakes. To say we moved into our second rental out of knee-jerk desperation would be an understatement. We freely gave up our first month, last month, and security deposit to get the hell out of that house. Of course, the gringo owner of that first house would not refund any of our money. We later found out that's how he makes money. He rents to people who are brand new to Panama, just like we were, rose-colored glasses and all that. And most people, being older retired people like us, would do just as we did. They'd get the hell out way before the lease ran out. And he'd be able to rent the house all over again and keep everyone's money. Surely doubling his income. When we found he was doing that for sure, at least we had solace in knowing we were not the only ones to make that kind of mistake. All right, me Johnny here throwing in my two cents. Doesn't that ring a bell for you longtime listeners? How many times have I told you some of the biggest con men and thieves in Latin America are nice, friendly, helpful gringo expats? And of course, that scenario runs rampant on the gringo tourist trail. You won't find those guys off the trail because newly arrived green gringos are slim pickings. One guess as to where you find vast quantities of fresh green gringos who don't speak Spanish, wearing rose-colored glasses. Where do green gringos get conned the most? How about Belize, Panama, Costa Rica, and every place else on the gringo tourist trail? All right, then she says, in the rental game, sadly, some real estate agents are out to gouge you. They play the net listing game. For example, the owner wants to rent the house for $700 a month, but the agent says it's $800, so they make an extra $100 for themselves without telling you, on top of the regular commission. There are crooked, gouging property managers, too. For example, you're not supposed to pay taxes on rent. Stay away from property managers that will quote you one price. And when it comes to signing the lease, if you look at the fine print, there will be a line or sentence that says, plus tax. We've had that game pulled on us, too. Unlike buying things at restaurants or hardware stores, there are no taxes on rentals. So again, if you're renting, you don't pay taxes on it. And if you're renting a condo, you're not responsible for any kind of maintenance fee. It must be included in the rent. She said, yes, we got gouged, right? Let me count the ways. Once, we found a rental in another part of Panama that was $300 less than what normal rents were going for in the areas we were exploring. Bottom line, if a rental price sounds way too good to be true, something's wrong. In that case, our mistake was we underestimated how much extra we would be paying for the things not included in the rent. In the contract with that particular property, it did not include internet, TV, garbage, or electricity. It was in one of the hottest parts of Panama, so in order for us to be comfortable, we had to have our air conditioner on 24 hours a day. After a month, we realized after paying all those extras, we were paying as much as the rest of the rentals. In our next problem rental case, we rented from a married couple, gringos again, and it was the wife who showed us around. We explained we had a Chihuahua dog, and she assured us pets were allowed. Well, it just so happened on the very first day when we were moving in, her husband came over and introduced himself. When he saw our little dog, he said, "Better not let your dog outside unless you tell me first. We have a guard dog on the premises at all times, and if he takes a look at your dog, you won't have a dog anymore." Turns out his wife had hidden their half Great Dane, half Rottweiler in their house when we first looked at the apartment. We found out this dog who guarded the entire gated property had already killed two dogs who had gotten through the fence on their property. Another tip here, don't believe real estate agents or property managers' information about what your electric bill and other utilities will be. They will lie. You must talk to your neighbors to find out what the real utility bills are. With one rental, the agent told us the electric bill had never been over $80 a month. Well, that worked for us. Then we moved in. First month's electric bill, $200, and every month thereafter, over $200. And we weren't even using our air conditioner 24/7, as we'd done with some of the previous apartments. Mistake, what are we up to now, 12? She says, if you're in a hot climate or the beach, beware of where the sun is setting in relation to where you hang out, the principal room or rooms you have your living quarters. In another mistake, we moved to a high rise on the ocean, and at first we were delighted when the property manager told us we could sit and enjoy our cocktails and hang out on the balcony as we watched the sunset. What could be sweeter than that? What we didn't realize later is that from noon till 6 p.m., that extremely hot afternoon sun would stream into our living room and kitchen area, and without air conditioning, the thermometer would easily hit 90. So, after our 6 months lease was up, we moved to an apartment on the other side of the building and had a cool sunrise instead of a hot sunset. By the way, as you may have figured, with the other apartment, we had to crank up the air conditioner at noon all through the rest of the day. Now for mistake, what are we up to, 15? Always insist on a written lease, even if you think you're friends with the landlord, and have a handshake deal. Get a lease in writing. You must have the amount of the rent and the monthly term clearly spelled out. We had one situation where the landlord, who we thought was a friend, rented out an apartment at a reasonable price. We did a handshake deal, no lease. Then, a month later, she raised the rent $100 on us. Then a month later, told us she needed to raise the rent another $100 again. Needless to say, we moved instead of playing that game. My best advice, she says, is don't assume anything. We once moved near a big town into a beautiful home. Once we were there, we found out the neighborhood was not set up correctly for internet. It was spotty at best, and we couldn't get a cable or even satellite. The home was only 6 kilometers away from a major area that had excellent internet, but we were SOL. After we signed the lease, we assumed we could just go down to the internet company and order TV and internet. In that case, we lived there during the entire lease, but we had to buy an internet stick that we plugged into our laptop. Turned out to be an extra $200 a month on top of our regular rental price. We certainly didn't count on that. She says, I highly recommend when you want to rent, you should come down, stay in a hotel or Airbnb for a week or two, then physically go to each rental that you're interested in. Thoroughly inspect the property, ask lots of questions, make sure everything the owner says is included in the rent and the contract. If you do these simple things, you can avoid those stupid mistakes and problems so many new green gringos stumble into. All right, me Johnny again. Very good stuff there. By the way, if you're coming down to check out Guatemala or El Salvador, thinking about living there, as your plan B, get the hell out of Dodge Future. Take note, my longtime seminar logistics coordinator, Rita, is exactly the right person to hold your hand through your relocation process. First step, you have a little phone consultation with her on the Signal app. You go through your needs and wants, and she works up an itinerary. And when you come down, she meets you at the airport, takes you around, shows you a bunch of rentals or whatever you're looking for, helps you get a bank account, health insurance, dentists and physician appointments, internet hookups, anything you need. Oh, and she gets you an appointment with our residency attorney, too. In other words, if your plan B destination is Guatemala or El Salvador, you hook up with Rita, and it's kind of a one-stop shop. Now, if you come down and try to do it all by yourself, man, you could really spin your wheels. Just a little advice here. We've got a nice little network down here to get you on the right track, even before you ever step foot here. Man, I wish I'd had a network like that when I first got down. Would have made life a whole lot easier.
South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.